Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for kicking off your week with us. This is your Monday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where we post all of our new podcasts, articles, news and notes, polls, every bit of baseball content you can find over there. If you're not somebody who uses social media, you can check us out at sportsethos.com. You get all that same great work. You don't get the tweets. I do a lot of work on Twitter, tweeting out different player notes, looking at most added and dropped players. Some of the same stuff we do here on the show, but you get it a lot earlier on Twitter usually, and you get it laid out in written form as opposed to me rambling like you get here. So follow on Twitter, but if not, you still get it at sportsethos.com. A lot of those same great articles, of course. I appreciate all you guys who are finding the show for the first time. It's a great time of year for people finding fantasy baseball content. Subscribe to the pod if you're a new listener. That really helps us out. And also leave a rating and review. I should say it more often. I sometimes say it at the end of the show, but who knows who listens all the way through. So if you wouldn't mind, a positive rating and review really does help more people see the show. It's a great time of year for people to be finding new baseball content. But guys, we're going to be getting into some news and notes. There's been a hell of a lot of stuff that's happened today. I started to record this show about 5 minutes ago, and then there was a couple things that came across the news, and I just stopped and restarted because there's a couple things we're going to have to talk about from today. We're also going to get into some Saturday and Sunday news, just talking about specific player performances from over the weekend, and then we are going to get into the most added and dropped players of the day. But the major thing that I am talking about here right now is that Framber Valdez has been scratched from his start tonight. First of all, if you're just hearing this right now, I mean, it's probably too late, but get him out of your lineup if there's any time for you. He's been scratched with elbow soreness. Oh, my God. Tell me if you heard that one before this week, guys. It's actually ridiculous, this elbow epidemic that's happening. I don't know. I mean, we talked about it. We kind of know why it's happening, but I don't know why it's happening like this. Maybe they're all just concentrated right now, and these guys are all getting hurt at the same time, and then we're not going to have as many injuries throughout the year, and then we'll look back at the end, and the number will be roughly the same, but it's hard to, you know, that's kind of an optimistic point of view. It looks like the injury number is just going to be kind of brutal. These aren't, you know, attrition-based injuries where guys have 170, 180 innings, and the arm just gives out or something like that. Like, these guys are fresh. They haven't pitched in 5 months. They have maybe thrown, what, 40 innings at this point? Not even 40. That's not even what they've thrown in spring. It's way less than that. You know, talking about simulated games and stuff, and maybe it adds up to like 40 innings, but it's not a lot. Like, it's very, very minimal workload at this time. For all these injuries to be popping up, it's definitely scary. But Framber, he has been scratched. Get him out of your lineup if you haven't heard and you're just hearing this right now. He is going to be going, according to Jeff Passan, he'll be evaluated by doctors to determine the severity. We don't know when. We don't know exactly, you know, the whole process yet. This has literally just happened 5 minutes ago. But yeah, get Framber Valdez out of your lineups because this is looking like it's going to go shit side up the way it's gone for a few pitchers recently. Luis Robert, let's talk about him. And guys, it's not positive news these days. It's usually a pretty dark news segment of these shows, like a lot of podcasts you guys probably listen to are right now. The news segments are usually pretty rough. Luis Robert is going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks with his hip flexor strain. We talked about this on Saturday. We weren't sure with the severity. He was put on the IL, but we didn't know if it was going to be something that was, it was a 10-day IL they put him on. So we weren't sure if this is going to be like a minimum stint thing, just a little bit of rest and he's fine or whatever. And then on Sunday, there was somebody within the organization who leaked that they were worried that this might be a whole season type of deal, 3-4 months, and then that turned out to be a little bit hyperbolic, it turns out, and it's only going to be maybe 2 months. But at the same time, he's expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks. My general view of whenever you hear any timeline given by any team, you can add at least a week or two to it, depending on the injury. Sometimes you can add at least a month, but I think in this case you can say, okay, Luis Robert's going to be gone for the next 10 weeks for my fantasy team. Gone for the rest of April, gone for May, gone for June, and you're probably thinking, okay, maybe we get him back at some point in July. He's not a drop for me outside of very, very, very extreme scenarios. Like if you're in a very shallow league, like let's say you're in an 8-team league or something like that, and you've just been bombarded with injuries and you have no IL spots. First of all, if you have IL spots, then there's no need to drop them. But hypothetically, if you're in like a 8-team league with no IL spots, you can probably drop Luis Robert. But in so many cases, like he might come back and give us Luis Robert type production. And we just saw last year, like, what was he, a top 30-ish type of player? He hit 38 home runs. His OPS was 860. He played 145 games. And I guess that kind of tricked us into thinking that he could stay healthy for a whole year. This hip has been a problem. It cost him a lot of time in 2021 and 2022. It's the same injury. It's the right hip flexor. So this is a situation where maybe he doesn't come back the same, but I think the upside will stop you from dropping Luis Robert outside of those extreme scenarios like I talked about, a really shallow league with no IL. Everything else, like 12-team leagues, especially like most of you guys are playing with IL spots, so it's not even a question. But if you're playing without them, like a lot of my leagues are 15-teamers with no IL, and even in those leagues, I think he's going to be held on to in most of them. Just to give you context, I would be shocked if, like, there will be some people who maybe cut him. I could see it in some 12-team leagues, but if you're playing in an NFBC league, if you're in a 15-team league and thinking about what to do with Luis Robert, be hard-pressed to cut him in those 15-teamers just because there's not really that much else that's really going to be out there to help you. In a 12-team league, I guess, you know, if you're, again, without IL, only if you're without IL, then I could maybe get behind it in a 12-teamer. There might be somebody worthwhile, but I think in most cases, the play here is to hold, and then you hope that you're able to get 60 games out of him at the end of the season. I know it's terrible when your expectations get changed around like that, and you're thinking a week ago that, even a few days ago, that Luis Robert might be able to stay healthy, and he might be able to be a 40-20 guy or whatever again. But, you know, you have to adjust those expectations. Right now, you should be thinking that if I get 60 games out of Luis Robert, it's a win. And even at that point, you might be stretching it. But I think even that upside of what he could do over a short sample should keep you from dropping him as of right now. If we keep hearing that there's setbacks and whatnot, then okay. But I think at this point of the year, considering how early it is, you might be in a crunch where you just had like 10 injuries. But a lot of the injuries you've had have been on the pitching side. I don't think your lineups are so depleted yet at this point. There might be exceptions, but I think a lot of you can afford to sustain holding on to him. And you're going to have somebody else that you can replace him with, right? You're going to put him on the IL. NFBC is a different kind of scenario because you're going to have to put him on the bench and you're not going to be able to actually like pick somebody up to actively replace him. But again, those are deeper leagues, generally speaking, where the value is a lot less. Generally, you guys are probably in 12-teamers, IL, and you're going to be holding him. And even without the IL, I would say Luis Robert is a hold outside of really extreme scenarios. Jonathan India is a bit of an interesting one. So he was scratched today from the lineup. There was some back and forth here. So he was scratched, and then he was hit by a rogue ball during batting practice, apparently. A ball hit him in the leg that was, I'm not sure who was doing the swing in here, but a foul ball during batting practice struck him. It was a low line drive. Apparently, he screamed out in pain. He left the field. He came back. He left. And then they announced that he was scratched from the lineup. But there was a lot of back and forth on this. It makes me think that it's probably not terribly serious, I believe. Yeah, he did walk off the field under his own power. So it's not a situation where he had to be carried off or anything like that. It's not like a massive fracture. Like, it looks like it's probably just going to be a couple of days. That being said, I took him out of a couple of my lineups that are weekly and bi-weekly just because I don't really want to take the risk. I do have fairly viable replacements. He is really nice, Jonathan. Yeah, I like him in that ballpark, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not taking the risk in a weekly lineup, and in a daily lineup, you can pretty easily just swap him out for the day. I'm not overly concerned, but I don't think it's terribly serious. But at the end of the day, we don't really know. But the fact that he was able to walk off under his own power leads me to believe that it's not that bad. But I think in weekly lineups, he's a little bit of a tricky one to put in there. Let's talk about Trevor Story. This one is kind of ugly. We got the update, and I didn't see it until this morning. Apparently, this was yesterday morning, afternoon, where he said that he, quote, hopes to play again this year, but indicated there's a chance he's out for the season. So he dislocated his shoulder. He's on the 10-day IL. I think a lot of people expected this was going to be a few weeks. This is now looking like a situation from his own mouth where he thinks he's going to be out for a very, very, very long time. Trevor Story is not the same player as Luis Robert. Now, there's the upside. Maybe at one point the upside was fairly similar. At this point of his career, with all the injuries and dealing with this in particular, I think that you can fairly easily cut Trevor Story. If you have IL spots again, it doesn't hurt you to put him there, but it's also a situation where, like, what am I going to get out of him at this point? Is he going to come back in August or something? Like, if he's saying he hopes to play again this year, it's not terribly optimistic. In leagues without IL, he's a very, very easy cut. If you have the IL spot and it's free, then sure, it's not hurting anybody. But if somebody else gets hurt, somebody more valuable or somebody with a shorter timeline, then don't hesitate to cut Trevor Story, because this looks pretty damn ugly, this update from today. Let's talk about Justin Verlander. So Justin Verlander had himself a rehab start. It was AAA, and he allowed 6 earned runs, struck out 6, pitching into the fourth inning. 46 of his 65 pitches were strikes. He retired the first 4 batters, and then he allowed some hits mixed in there, five extra base hits. It's not ideal. The strikeouts and the strike-to-ball ratio is pretty good stuff, and I'm not exactly sure about a timeline if they want to have him do another rehab start or two. I think that they're planning on one, and then I guess they'll see how it goes for him. He got up to 65 pitches, so you'd think that one more would probably do it. At this point of his career, you want to have those bullets coming out at the big league level and not use too many of them in the minor leagues. So the thought is that potentially he could rejoin the rotation April 17th against the Braves. If he does get activated for a start against the Braves, I'm not starting him in that situation. The Braves, I wrote this in an article when my weekly report last week, that I don't think the Braves have that same kind of magic they did last year. Maybe it's Acuña struggling, but they just don't feel quite as magical. That being said, I'm not going to throw Verlander out there, especially he's getting knocked around a little bit in AAA. Now, it wasn't a terrible start. He had 12 whiffs on 65 pitches. It wasn't bad, but assuming that's the case and that's the plan from RotoWire, that seems like what they're planning on right now, I would not be terribly interested in starting him against the Braves. That's just me, but right now that's not something that I'm going to be terribly interested in. Gerrit Cole will begin throwing this week. He's going to just start to play catch. I think this is a situation where if you have Gerrit Cole, you're selling him. You're selling him pretty heavily if you can. So he is somebody where 94% rostered.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
People are still, and I mean, honestly, I'm kind of surprised it's not 100% rostered on Yahoo. I guess that's just really shallow leagues, no IL or something like that. I think you start to think about trading him, because right now, this is a positive update. this is something that's very positive. And right now in the scheme of, in the grand scheme of the pitching landscape with all the injuries, there's not a lot of positive updates, especially somebody like Gerrit Cole. I think a lot of people will see something like he's playing catch. It's not that serious. He's going to be activated right as soon as he's eligible. But at the end of the day, and maybe this is just a pessimistic point of view of things, but you know, his injury is not something that's just going to heal on its own. It's going to eventually require surgery. That's why I kind of hate when they just put these elbow injuries off. They kick the procedure down the road, like what happened with DeGrom, where they try and pitch through it and they manage it and all this crap. It doesn't usually work out very well. I don't think that Gerrit Cole is going to be Gerrit Cole this year. First of all, from a volume standpoint, even if he does come back, he's going to get babied. He's not going to be going 7-8 innings. That's been a staple of Gerrit Cole, his massive workloads, being able to throw 125, 130 pitches if need be. That's not happening this year. The talent was already on the decline from last year, and you know, you just look at the strikeout rates and everything like that, and the supporting metrics, the ERA estimators were all kind of off last year. This is probably why. So I don't expect him to come back and be Gerrit Cole, but I think because we haven't seen him actually come out in a game and get blown up yet or anything, people will perceive him as not safe, but maybe as like a bright light at this point. They've lost Strider. They've lost Yuri Perez. They've lost Bieber. There's definitely a team out there with all three, and my heart goes out to you because that is awful. I have shares of all three of them spread out on various teams, but there's probably a guy in some league who has all three of them. Gerrit Cole might be a beacon of light to that person. They might see that he's playing catch, and they might think, you know what? I'm going to take a chance. Gerrit Cole's playing catch. He looks healthy. I'm going to try and acquire him right now because he looks like he might come back, and I might get 4 months of Gerrit Cole, and my pitching certainly could use some help. I just don't think it's going to be that helpful, what we're getting out of Gerrit Cole this year. I think that his elbow will eventually need surgery, and they're just prolonging the inevitable because this is generally how these things work. Call me a pessimist, but that's kind of what we're generally dealing with here. That's usually how these things work. Let's talk about some things that we saw over the course of the weekend. Reed Detmers, I think, is the one that really needs pointing out. I was watching this outing. He was absolutely dominating the Red Sox. He went six strong, struck out 12, allowed one earned run, one walk, and three hits. He was just absolutely dominant. And Reed Detmers is somebody that's still kind of available and undervalued. I don't really get it, but he's up to 57% rostered. It's jumped up 25% from last week, but he's still sitting out there on waiver wires. And what we saw from him in these first two outings is dominant. Like AL East matchups, both of them, Baltimore, who is, you know, a very, very, very solid offense. And then Boston, who I think is actually really an underrated offense in and of themselves. I know the team's not that great overall. They might surprise us, but I don't think their scene is that daunting. But he just destroyed both of them. Through the first 11 innings pitched, he has struck out 19 batters. His ERA is 1.64. The whip is 0.82. They're both, I mean, very small sample sizes, but he has looked just absolutely lights out. Those strikeouts were coming very easily to him. He was looking effortless, and I think if you're seeing him out on waiver wires, you should absolutely be jumping to go out and get him. We need to talk about Spencer Steer. Excuse me. Spencer Steer has been unconscious to start this season. He's the number two fantasy player. He went 0 for 3 yesterday, which was kind of a shock based on the way that the season has started, only a second 0 for of the year. He's batting .406. He has hit three homers, stolen two bases, 12 ribbies, and 8 runs through the first 32 at-bats of the season. This is unbelievable stuff from him. But it also, I think, means that you should probably be looking into selling high. It's just the nature of the fantasy player. We're going to do this a lot this time of year where I'm going to use sell high and buy low. And those terms get thrown around a lot, and it's not always going to be able to work. But in a case like Spencer Steer, where he had a very good year last year, people might buy into this as a massive, massive breakout, especially considering all the eligibility. On Yahoo, first, second, third, and outfield, it's crazy where how the eligibility works for him there. You can plug him in pretty much anywhere. There's a lot to really like. But at the same time, he's never going to be able to – his price is never going to be higher than right now. He's never going to be worth more than he is at this point, the way that he has started off this season. Now, he's a pretty decent prospect, but he was never like a number one, top five prospect. I don't believe he was never He never reached those heights. He was a very good prospect, but he was, I don't know, not somebody that you'd be expecting to be a top five, top 10 player. And don't get me wrong, I know a lot of you are not stupid. A lot of you know that Spencer Steer is not going to be a top five player, the number two overall player. But that doesn't mean that you can't eke out some value from him right now. Whether it's in a package or one for one, Spencer Steer was generally going around pick 100, 110, like give or take. It depended on your room specifically. Some of them he was going a little earlier, a little bit later. If you can even trade up from your particular draft like two or three rounds of value from Spencer Steer, let's say you drafted him in the 10th and you can trade him for a 7th round guy, or you can package up Steer and a 6th round guy and get back a 2nd round or a 3rd round guy, incremental increases in value that you can get because of a guy's hot start. You should be capitalizing on something like this with Spencer Steer. And I'm going to jump around a little bit just while I'm talking about a hot start, and I'm just going to say it with Ronald Blanco, and I tweeted it out yesterday, it's one of the biggest sell highs that I've ever seen in my time covering fantasy over the last three seasons. This is crazy. Good for him for having these great performances, but it's one of the least sustainable runs that you're ever going to find. Zero ERA, okay. His xFIP is 444. I mean, and it's a small sample size. It's tough to read too much into it. xFIP 444, Sierra 456. Those are generally the two that I like to read into. xERA, FIP actually are pretty good. I don't put as much stock into them. If you want to look at them, they're very good numbers, though. The FIP is 291. The xERA is 0.90, and some people will point to that. But there's a few things we have to look at here. Even in these starts, 11.5% walk rate, which is well above the average that you're hoping for. The average is about 8%. You're hoping for even less, and you're getting 3.5% above the average. 21.2% strikeout rate. That's pretty terrible for a starting pitcher. It's very hard to get by with a strikeout rate that low. It's below, I mean, you can, but for your fantasy, and I'm not talking about real life. Real life, you can get by with a strikeout rate of 21%. When the walk rate's that high, 11.5, it's really tricky. And the 21% strikeout rate for fantasy is crap. There's nothing you can really do with it. 15 innings, 11 strikeouts to go along with 6 walks? That's terrible stuff. Let's get to the BABIP. 0.029 batting average on balls in play. 0.029 is just an absurdly stupid number. If you look at like numbers like this, like I do all every day, just constantly looking at different player pages on Fangraphs, you never see a number like this. The BABIP for the average player is about 300. It's roughly in the 300 range. It's kind of hard to get an average because different players are different depending on their speed and different factors, ballpark, etc. But 0.029 is just ridiculous. Just a ridiculous number that is so incredibly unsustainable. Ronald Blanco is 30 years old. He's a career minor leaguer. He's never had a hell of a lot of success. His strikeout rate, admittedly, was a bit better in the minors. And maybe he could get up to like a 22-ish. But with that walk rate, which is not really going anywhere, command has always been a problem. With the incredibly low BABIP and the fact that his strand rate right now is 100%. All those base runners that he's allowed to reach, none of them have scored. The average left on base rate is about 70, 72%. So Ronald Blanco is a massive sell high if you're able to. And people are saying, I tweeted it out and I got a kind of a mixed bag of replies. Some people were saying like, yeah, I packaged him up with somebody for Nick Pivetta. I think he packaged him with Seth Lugo or Michael Wacha, one of those guys. And they ended up getting Nick Pivetta. And a couple other people are saying, well, he's still on waivers in my league. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really understand why people are so interested. There's very easy, very, very publicly available data that shows us this is kind of fraudulent. And again, good for him for having a couple of good starts. But this is not something that you are going to see continue. Not to mention, like we talked about earlier, Verlander's close to returning, and there's a chance that he's the guy that gets replaced, especially with what we're going to see likely over the next few outings. If he has one more good outing, then it's officially the biggest sell high that I've seen ever. Right now, he's already a massive, massive sell high, but you're going to see a horrible, horrible outing from him that's going to undo all of the good, and it's probably coming sooner than later. So get off the Ronald Blanco train before it's too late, because it's probably going to end very, very, very ugly for you. So let's talk a little bit about the catcher situation in Pittsburgh. it got a little more complicated with Joey Bart coming into town. I don't really know why Joey Bart was somebody that they went after. Their catching situation, I didn't think needed bulking up, but they brought in Joey Bart. His first game, he hits a home run. This also coincides with Henry Davis not performing terribly well to start the season. He's 4 for his first 30. Today's game, Henry Davis takes a seat, and it is Joey Bart in the lineup. So this is something that we might have to worry about a little bit going forward in your two-catcher leagues. If you took Henry Davis as a guy who was like expected to be your second catcher, God forbid your first catcher, it might be a little bit ugly in terms of, one, getting the eligibility, and two, him actually playing and performing, like, because it's going to be a 10-game threshold in a lot of cases. I think he's at 6 or 7 at this point. So it might take just an extra week or so, and then we might be in a little bit more of a timeshare than we were hoping for with Henry Davis. So our expectations probably need to be adjusted a little bit here. And I think, honestly, a lot of people in Yahoo leagues, he's 20% rostered. I think you can find better options available, especially in your one-catcher formats. He's not a guy that I'd be looking at in one-catcher leagues. I think that he is somebody that you can be getting rid of. Guys, I apologize. I think I'm getting a little bit sick here with the changing weather. It tends to happen this time of year for me. Something else I do want to mention is Ezekiel Tovar. He was somebody that was kind of an early breakout guy for me. I mentioned early in the offseason that I really liked him to potentially be a breakout candidate this year. It's looking pretty good over the last few games, but it's a reminder to me and to kind of all of us that this is probably a Coors thing, and it goes for all Rockies players. That, and I think, again, a lot of you guys know this, but if you have the option to sit them away from home, that is almost always going to be the better option. There's nobody in that lineup anymore who is, you know, the Tulowitzkis and the Trevor Stories and the Todd Heltons, Blackman in his prime, Cargo. They don't have anybody like that anymore where you can justify starting them home in a way. I think most of these guys, Tovar included, as much as I like him, at this point, they're probably guys where if they're not playing at Coors, they can probably take a seat. There's just really not that much talent in that lineup to justify it at this point. But Tovar is somebody that I am very interested in starting for those Coors games. He's looked really good, and I just wanted to point out that he's still only on 78% of Yahoo rosters. I think that, you know, that's a reasonable number, but it could be a little bit higher. Daily changes, a lot of those leagues, you can afford to have him as one of your guys, especially considering the potential power speed with the batting average, and especially if you're just plotting him in there when he is at Coors. That's just going to boost the overall counting stats for you. If you are in a league where you do have OBP, OPS, those kind of stats, it just makes him that much more valuable. And in a daily changes league, you're not missing out on the counting stats either because you have somebody else to put into your lineup there. That's more Saturday. Let's talk about Sunday. Ryan Pepiot, I think, is somebody that is very much worth talking about. He had an incredibly impressive outing, especially considering it came at Coors Field. 6 innings, 3 hits, no earned runs. He struck out 11, did not walk a batter, and had a 39% CSW. Ryan Pepiot is one of those guys that I was kind of fading coming into the year. It was he was one of those guys, and we mentioned it earlier, the left-on-base percentage stat for him was like 98.2%. The BABIP was, I think, below 200. So he was somebody that was kind of a fade from that perspective because he was due for regression. But then he comes to Tampa, and the Rays always are able to do some kind of devil magic with these players. I don't even know what it is exactly. But Ryan Pepiot, so far, I mean, looks pretty good. That first outing was not great, admittedly. Texas is kind of a tough team, but then he goes and has a great start against the Rockies at Coors. I mean, the Rockies are a terrible lineup like we just talked about, but that environment, you know, the ball is usually flying all over the place. It's a really good sign that he was able to do this in Colorado. Fastball had a 51% whiff rate, 21 total swings and misses on the night, which was by far the most of any SPs. 82% rostered on Yahoo. It feels low considering the SP RP eligibility. That's a super valuable thing, especially in points leagues, and we've talked about this. If you're in a points league and you can slot in a guy like Pepiot, that is just so valuable. He's going to give you three relievers worth of points in a given week. So that's something you should definitely consider if he's still sitting out there. For any leagues, points leagues, category leagues, but specifically in points leagues, there's a lot of value there. Zach Gelof kind of busted out of his slump over the weekend. He had 6 runs, also stole a base and hit his first homer of the year. People were dropping him over on Yahoo. He fell down to about 85% rostered. He's made his way back up to 86. It's not a situation, especially if you invested in Zach Gelof, you paid a decent price, top 120, top 130, 40, in that kind of range. To drop him after 1 week was really stupid if you paid that price. Like, let's just be honest. If you paid that price for anybody in the top 130, 140, outside of maybe, like, you know, Estuary Ruiz is a different case. A guy gets demoted, it's a different story. Guy loses his job as a closer, it's a little bit of a different story. But Gelof, like, there's nobody to compete with him for playing time. Second, third, sometimes leading off in the lineup. He's always in that top three. Second base is kind of a premium position. He did pretty well last year, as much as I wasn't really a believer. If you drafted him and you dropped him, then that's really, really stupid. And if you see him on waiver wires in your league, you should be picking him up. 86%. Most leagues, you're not going to find him, but I think he's worth taking a look at if you are seeing him on waivers. In fact, he's just worth adding if you see him there. He should not be on waivers in any formats. Nolan Gorman, he had a couple home runs yesterday. He's another player that people started to give up on pretty quickly. The strikeout rate is still an issue. It's way up there. But an everyday player in the middle of a great lineup, sometimes it kind of surprises me the fact that they slot Nolan Gorman as high as they do in that order, batting third. Occasionally he's batting third today, third or fifth. But, I mean, he hit 27 homers last year, stole 7 bases. He's in a great lineup, second and third eligible.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He's like a 35 homer, 100 RBI upside type of player. He should not be floating around on any waiver wires. It's just ridiculous that he's available anywhere. Garrett Crochet continued what he did against the Royals yesterday. He's just on one of those runs right now. 5 innings pitched, 3 hits, 2 earned runs. He struck out 5, did not walk a batter, and had a 36% CSW. 15 whiffs on 77 pitches, and his slider is just disgusting. 7 whiffs on 11 swings. They just don't know what to do with it. Now, the roster rate for him is another one, 77%. Why are people not just adding him every single place right now? Even if you don't plan on having him on your team the entire year, which, I mean, there's a chance he could be on your team the entire year, but maybe you can sell high. Maybe there's an opportunity to just, you know, wait and see on your bench, stream kind of situation, streaming off your bench, which a lot of people like. He's RP eligible. I don't understand why he's not 100% rostered. It's kind of stupid to me, but I don't know. He is a sell high. Like, don't get me wrong. Garrett Crochet at this point in trading leagues is a sell high and somebody that I do worry about durability over the course of the whole season, but you got to be banking this while he's on this hot streak. You got to be starting him. He's facing the Reds this week. It's not in Cincinnati. It's at home. They're really banged up. India's out of the lineup. They're missing half their friggin' lineup, it feels like, at this point. He's getting started in all formats for that one. Where I have him, I have 4 shares of Garrett Crochet. He's in the starting lineup for all of them. Make sure that he's not sitting on your waiver wire. Jack Flaherty had a pretty bad outing against the A's. Settled down after a bad start, but the line was pretty tough to eat. 9 hits and 6 earned over 6 innings. He struck out 5 and walked a batter. 38% CSW, though, that's pretty solid. All of his pitches performed pretty well in terms of swings and misses. I wouldn't rush to drop him because of this. I mean, there is the argument to say, like, yep, Flaherty showed us who he is. He is who we thought he was. You know, there's that meme. They are who they thought we were. I don't think that's, you know, I'm far from a Jack Flaherty believer. If you guys listen back to the show last year around the time of the trade deadline, I thought that he sucked, but he does look quite a bit better this year, and I'm willing to change my opinion. I think that he's still worth holding. One bad start against Oakland, as shitty as it is for your teams, is not worth dropping over. The Tyler O'Neill redemption tour is very real. 5 homers, all solo home runs. Can we please get him some help in that lineup? The Yahoo players need to go and add him. He is another one of those must-roster players. He is currently the number 4 player on the season. 82% rostered. It was 75 yesterday, so I'll give credit where it's due. People are adding him, but it's still not high enough. An absolute must roster player. 30 to 35 home runs, double-digit stolen bases. He has hit for a high batting average in the past. Prime spot, great ballpark. Like, there's just a laundry list of reasons why you should be adding Tyler O'Neill. The great defense keeps him in the lineup. There's not real risk of missing time outside of a potential injury, but he's been good. You know, knock on wood. I shouldn't even say things like that, but he's been good from that regard. So he is an absolute must roster player. Let's talk about Giancarlo Stanton. He does this a few times a year. He had a very good weekend. A couple of home runs. He had a grand slam and just killed the Blue Jays yesterday. He's inevitably going to get hot here and there. That's just kind of the nature of a player like Stanton. There'll be a week where he hits there'll be a week where he hits like seven home runs, six home runs. And then there'll be 2 weeks where you get, a 107 batting average with two hits over 2 week span, and you're just questioning yourself. And the thing with the hot streaks is that you will start him on the wrong weeks. You'll see the hot weekend and you'll put him in the lineup next week. So, like, anybody who has him rostered right now, he's in their lineups this week because he just went hot over the weekend. But there's a decent, half-decent chance that Stanton just goes cold right now, and then you get nothing out of it. Because, that's the nature of streaky players. You're usually starting them at the wrong times. It's very tricky to time that right. So I think that you just don't really need to bother outside of 15-team leagues. If you're playing in a 12-teamer, 10-teamer, anything more shallow than that, then I don't think that he's somebody to worry about. If you're playing in 15s, then yeah, he is worth it just because, like we've mentioned, there's not really that many great options otherwise, but he's also not somebody that you really need to worry about for most of you guys listening. I know it's tempting, but the production at the end of the day is usually going to be a terrible batting average, no stolen bases, inconsistency in and out of the lineup. He's just not somebody that I think is worth bothering. Let's talk about Jake Cronenworth. I'm going to just keep talking about him until he's 100% added. I don't think I have a lot of influence, but what little influence I have, I will use to get people adding Jake Cronenworth. He has not hit a home run this year, but he has the most barrels of anybody who has not hit a home run. I saw that somewhere on Twitter today. 6 barrels already on the season, and outside of that, he's batting over 300. He's already driven in 9 runs, scored 5 times. Again, we've gone over this a bunch with Jake Cronenworth, but first and second base eligible. He has batted third in every single game this season. He's batting between Tatis, Machado, Bogarts. It's a great opportunity for him to score a lot, to get a lot of RBIs. We know that he's not a massive fantasy threat in terms of power and speed, but he could give you 15, 17 homers to go along with maybe 8 steals. He's hit 270 in the past. There is a lot of value in Jake Cronenworth. 53% rostered is doing him a disservice. He should be rostered. I don't want to say he's a must roster everywhere, but pretty much everywhere, Jake Cronenworth should be on rosters. Not like 8-team leagues, 10-team leagues, but you could argue, honestly, I think 10-team leagues and above. Like 10 is probably a little borderline, but you could definitely make the case in 10s and above for Jake Cronenworth. Let's just talk briefly about Colin Ray. Second consecutive good outing to open the season. Both victories. He had 6 innings yesterday, 3 strikeouts, allowed 7 hits, 1 earned run, 28% CSW. There's some 15-team streamer appeal, I think, here for Colin Ray. He is like the number 3 starter now for the Brewers. Don't be expecting those kind of outings consistently, but I think in 15-teamers, he definitely warrants taking a look at. Let's take a look now at the most added and dropped players of the day. The most added is Reed Detmers. 22,000 leagues have gone ahead on Yahoo and added him. That's great to see. We already talked about him. He is a priority pickup if you can get him. Cody Bradford is also a great pickup for this week. He has looked fantastic his first 2 outings against kind of not easy opponents either. The Cubs and the Astros got wins in both of them. 10 strikeouts over 12 and two-thirds isn't anything to write home about, but he also gets the A's this week. He looks like a really great streamer and another one of those nifty SPRP eligible guys. Spencer Turnbull, he has a 2-start week. I'm not crazy about Spencer Turnbull. I added him in one of my leagues because it's a 15-teamer, and like we've talked about, like I've talked about a lot in 15-teamers, there's really not that many options out there on the waiver wire. But that being said, he gets St. Louis and then Pittsburgh. I don't think there's really much of a need to pick him up for the St. Louis start. It's kind of a tricky one. Turnbull is a little bit of a cherry bomb, to use Nick Pollock's term. You're not really sure what you're going to get out of him on any given start. Yeah, he had a great debut against Cincinnati, 7 strikeouts over 5 innings. He got the victory. I don't know how much I trust that on a start-to-start basis. I did pick him up in a 15-team league. I did slot him in for the 2-start week. It's out of a necessity because it's a league where I've lost a couple pitchers already. But I don't think a lot of you guys in 12-teamers need to bother with Spencer Turnbull. Ronald Blanco is another guy. 16,000 people have added him up. I just know it's going to end badly. If you're adding him and putting him into some kind of trade, it's generally frowned upon in the fantasy world to do that kind of thing. Pick a guy up right off the waiver wire and immediately put him into trade. But hell, if you can do something like that, then you should try to. Or if you've had him and milked out what he's given you these first couple starts, then see if you can get anything back for him. I don't think he'll be in the rotation come a month from now, even maybe 6 weeks, depending on what happens with injuries and all that. But I think you should be selling high on Ronald Blanco. Brendan Donovan is another perennially under-rostered player. I've talked about him constantly over the last couple of years. He's leading off most days for a very, very good lineup, and he's off to a very good start. He's batting .313. He's hit a home run, scored 7 times, and driven in 6 through just 32 at-bats. First, second, and outfield eligible, I believe, on NFBC. It's second base and outfield. There's a lot to really like about Donovan, and only 50% rostered in Yahoo leagues. Definitely somebody to consider. A daily changes darling, considering the leading off against righties aspect of it and the multiple positions. You got to really like what you're seeing out of him. Tanner Houck is also getting added quite a bit, and I understand it. I think we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves here. He's had a couple of really great outings to open the year at Oakland and against the Angels, and I think that he's a good streamer again because he happens to get the Angels again this week. But he is somebody where I think that he's exceeding what we can probably expect out of him, and this is something where it's not going to come crashing down because I don't think the Angels are necessarily even capable of that kind of thing. But I wouldn't be like tripping over myself to add him. He was a priority add for us last week. We nailed that one. 2 wins over 12 innings pitched, 17 strikeouts, a 0 ERA, and a 0.75 whip. It was an incredible stream, but I think we should probably get out while the getting's good in a lot of cases and not try and overdo it with Tanner Houck. I think he's pretty good, but 10 and 12 teamers, you guys can probably leave him alone. Let's get into some of the most dropped players today. Number one, Shane Bieber, understandable. He's out for the year. Everybody should drop him. He's still on 44% of rosters. People are asleep at the wheel, or they're just having a moment where they kind of mourn the loss of the player on their team. I know I've done that before. You don't drop a guy the day that they get dropped or the day that they get hurt or put on the IL. You kind of just leave it for a day, so those are kind of trickling in. But it's better to just get him off your team now before it gets too rough. A couple of these guys we've talked about, I think it's premature. Specifically, Flaherty is getting dropped a lot. That one, I don't understand. Trevor Story, I mean, I understand it. IL leagues, I would probably just put him on the IL if you have space, but I also totally understand getting rid of him. It's not a situation where he's a must-hold through this injury. He's definitely somebody that's expendable on your teams. Alec Marsh is also getting dropped quite a bit. You know, that start yesterday, it started off really well, clean through the first 3 innings, and I thought that this was going to lead to some irresponsible Alec Marsh bids. But then he gave up a couple runs against the White Sox. I think it actually ended up, it was 3 runs on 8 hits, and it kept some of those bids down. I don't think people bid a lot on him either. NFBC, whatever format you're playing, I think people were kind of, put off very quickly by Alec Marsh yesterday after he had a great start against the Orioles, and then he started off really well, and I thought we're looking at like triple-digit fab bids, but no, we didn't really see any of those, not that I saw anyway, of Alec Marsh, and he's somebody that I would be very comfortable leaving on the waiver wire and dropping. He gets the Mets this next time out. They haven't looked great, but also not a team where I'm really going out of my way to stream against, especially not a guy like Marsh where he's not bad, but he's also not terribly great either. Victor Scott is getting dropped a lot. I understand it in shallow formats. Lars Nootbaar is going to be back pretty soon, and there's a chance that we see him get sent down, especially because he's 3 for his first 36. It's been really bad stuff. He's in the lineup today, batted ninth. We'll see what happens, but it looks like Victor Scott is headed the way of the Dodo Bird, going back to AAA sooner than later. Gavin Stone is getting dropped. I don't really understand it, honestly, after, what is it, two starts here. I thought for a second he had made a third one for some reason. I think the Korea mixed everything up. He didn't start in Korea. My brain's in a bit of a fog. He did not start in Korea. He started twice. He hasn't looked bad. I mean, he has 11 strikeouts in eight innings. He's getting a little bit screwed in terms of the expected stats. And when you look under the hood a little bit, he had a lot of whiffs, and he actually looked pretty okay. The fact that the game was rained out and he only threw the first three innings, I think he would have stayed in probably. Only one of those runs was earned, and there was also errors going on. So, like, it was just overall a bad situation. I wouldn't be dropping Gavin Stone yet. I think that that's a pretty premature thing to be doing here. I think in maybe in 10-team leagues you can drop him, maybe. But even then, I think the potential is really good. Maybe not ace level, but, you know, SP2 kind of outcome is very possible for Gavin Stone. I think dropping him right now would be making a pretty big mistake. A couple other players who are getting dropped that I think are worth mentioning. James Outman, I think it's way too soon to be giving up on him. On a lot of these players, most of these players, guys, like Outman, I know he was like a 170 to 180 type of ADP most of the time, but still, he gave you 23 homers and 16 steals. He's in an incredible lineup. I think it's just way too soon to be giving up on somebody like Outman. Christopher Sanchez is another one. He has one bad outing, and it was pretty bad stuff what he gave you against the Nationals. But he's, again, like so talented. He had a really good outing his first time out. And people, thousands of them are dropping Christopher Sanchez to the point where he's below 70%. I think it's an overreaction. And the last one I'll mention is Vinny Pasquantino. He's getting dropped all over the place, thousands of leagues. I think it's just way too soon to be giving up on a guy with this level of talent after 33 at-bats. It hasn't looked great so far, but it's 33 at-bats. You know, you hit two home runs tomorrow, and that changes the whole, you know, where you're ranked and the dollar values on the season and all of this stuff. OPS gets, it's just the small sample size stuff. Really, you shouldn't read too much into it. On my end, specifically for hitters, you know, they go 0 for 30. Okay, who gives a shit at this time of year? It really doesn't matter. Francisco Lindor, he goes 0 for 31, and then the next day, what is it, he went 2 for 4 or 3 for 4. It's like, it's just going to happen this time of year. Guys will break out of it. I wouldn't read too much into it with these guys who are studs. And Vinny Pasquantino, he's not a fully established player yet, but he's somebody that you were paying a pretty decently high draft pick for that you're already cutting after a week. I think it's just really premature for that. But guys, we'll leave it there. Appreciate you guys checking out the show. We're going to be back tomorrow with a guest. It's been a little bit of time since we've had a guest on the show, but Gray Albright, the founder of Razzball, is going to be talking with us about some early season surprises. We're going to go through some of these major outliers and talk about whether or not we buy it in the long run. But that will do it. Until tomorrow, guys, take care and have a great night.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.